all the way up from Limerick, can we welcome Mr. Dominic Taylor?
Thanks, Paul. Great to be back here again. This is a poem about my father, called The Timber Box. My father did the dirty work down at the mill, for the dust of mahogany, beech, and pine from the four corners of the world was sucked in by innocent lungs. As he oversaw life in the mill, he ended up overlooked, chasing and harrying the boys, pandering to bosses. This veneer of responsibility and authority became the plank of his existence as his life splintered and scattered like the sawdust that blew through the mill. Discarded and forgotten, wages paid for 3 months, dead within a year, and laid to rest in a timber box he entered a lifetime ago. Thank you. This is a little ditty called The Barking Dog. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, and the dog starts barking downstairs. No one else is awake except me. I turn over to you, but you're fast asleep, oblivious to the state of the world. At 5 o'clock, I eventually go downstairs, let the dog out to do her business, wait for her to finish, and then go back to bed. 15 minutes later, she starts barking again. This time, I reach for the heavy artillery. I nudge you awake and let you deal with her. Thank you. This is a serious one. Weapons of mass destruction. And so my brother Joe. You always came home with the most unusual things. A Kalugan's bow just back from the Congo. A German Luger. Handheld air guns. And various types of knives. Cowboys and Indians was your favorite game. A hurley, your substitute for a rifle. Although you fought many a battle in the gardens of our estate and shot and killed your fair share of Indians before Mass on Sunday mornings, you were not a violent person. As you grew older, you put away the guns and knives, grew your hair long, and exchanged your cowboy suit for a pair of hipsters. Started playing more outside the Wimpy Bar and the Beat Club on Post Office Lane. This was your new battleground. Swapped your beloved Beluga's bow for a guitar and your knives became paintbrushes. Mass was out the window. Left us behind to fight the rear guard action. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dominic. Next up to the mic we have Mr. Alan Cogley.
The first poem is about the English language and kind of an Irish view of the English language. It sits with us a foreign tongue, somehow we were also of dumb, and father could not talk of dumb, nor never speak their native tongue. The wedge moved in deeper than skin, between our people the language died, and father could not talk to son, nor never speak their native tongue. Our own language on the run, after the insanity of famine, there was this cultural travesty, and father could not talk to son, nor never speak their native tongue. But let's not lay blame, instead we should reclaim this language that our minds run in, the language of McDonald's, Shakespeare, Coca-Cola, Wordsworth, Dickinson, Friends, and Keats. We must obscure this corporate deluge, the advertising tide, with poetry, rhythm, beautiful words, and rhymes. Let us not let this new language be defiled for us, for them, for everybody. For it is in English that my mind runs in, and that is why it's my mother's tongue. So I reclaim it, engrave it, and hold it dear, like a tear for those who cannot express their fear. Okay, the next one is, it's for a girl I knew in Dublin. So this is Sir Carmel, an honest one. I enjoyed living in your eyes, modest, glory endured, bestowing blessings on my endeavours. But I never moved, as though frozen in your eyes, enjoying your teenage crush too much. And now we move away, you to Canada, me to Cork. Is it sad that we nearly loved, and never really knew each other? I did not find out what would have happened if I had moved or melted in your eyes.
Thanks, Alan. And next, can we have a welcome for Mary O'Connell?
Hi, good evening, everybody. This first poem was workshopped. I was lucky enough to have it workshopped with Paddy Galvin and Greg O'Donoghue. And it's called Tarot Reading. The cards said I would lose you, but refused to tell me when. Swords rained three and three again, tearing aside the veil that screens what might yet be. Pick three cards. I close my eyes, feel the fan, peacock's tail. Death card, stark among series swords. Does this mean the man I love is going to die? Quite suddenly is the reply. Ticking clock, sound of cars. Second card, the knave, wild, unforeseen, a prancing fool, pushing to the edge. Third card, sun breaking through, transcending time. Comfort falls away, remembering the Mayan text. Total darkness, 10 years hence, fall of the fifth sun. This is a poem that I wrote on the death of Gregory O'Donoghue. It's called Watches by Willow. You knew before it happened your days would be cut short, felt autumnal weather in your bones, catching the sundown freight train as it shunted towards the dark, looking out for davits and Sean Dunn. Before your wandering spirit reaches railroad's end, the whippoorwill may call you to that length of riverbank where a band of Iroquois once saved you from the flood, to let you stretch your limbs beneath leafy webs of light, using their lore and unguents to soothe the stinging flesh opened by rapid rocks. May Little Wing shelter you again. I read this one already here, but it seems to have come back into the news again. It's called From Russia with Lunch. When Claudius killed King Hamlet, he found an artful ruse and poured some poison in his ear as he began to snooze. Back in Moscow last November, fresh toxins were devised. Alexander Litvinenko was about to be surprised. In a Swiss hotel in Mayfair, two cronies that he met persuaded him to join them, a move he would regret. Because Lugovoy and Kovtun, not ones to mess about, got him to drink a cup of tea, which made his hair fall out. From a hospital in London, with his dying breath, he cursed his boss, the Russian premier, who, he claimed, had done his worst. In bygone days, they both were spies for the former KGB. But Alex had turned dissident and informed the BBC plutonium-210 was used to slowly fry his brain, a radioactive substance he'd fight against in vain. which only the Politburo, or agents sent by Putin, could source and guard with vigilance before they put the boot in. When Anna Politkovskaya revealed a secret plot a month before, they hit the roof, and she, of course, was shot. No leopard ever changed his spots. They won't call for Putin's head. Take care before you sleep tonight to look beneath the bed.
Thank you, Mary. There's no poison in cork. And next up to the microphone, Mr. George Harding. Mr. George Harding.
This is just a little pity to get on Sean's nerves, called Dwell. Do not ever dwell except where you live, and all you've got to tell is all you must give. Give always well and only ever true, and when it sounds, the bell will ring true for you.
Thank you, George. And next up to the microphone, Mr. John Ryan.
Hey, got two pieces this week. So if I can just find it now, I'll be doing well. Okay, the first one is called Passage of Time. Tumbling times sprayed away moments never seems to match intended itinerary. Trimming figurative tides all feels assured in theory. Reality strikes, and often weary we realize the catch. Ever preparedness, big delusion, established opinion, holding us in like a bird on a tether. The mists drift along, disguising human scenery. A series of backdrops fall away back to the undesigned. But yet another explanation emerges, and the experts again reassure our happy homestead, in that the preeminence of their wisdom remains timeless, yet forgetting convenient parts of history. The law and the news and security sellers and the showbiz collective combine, ready for our ignorance to enshrine. And this one, I suppose, based on the theme of it, it's partly in homage to our guest this evening. It's called Hope, Where Does It Live? Hope, where does it go to when someone is sad, or another is thought of as mad? And in the case of the bereaved, does it go to seed? When there is danger in the dark, and when the heart is sank, and the cold find its way into the marrow, does hope hide in a deep cave, protected by a gargantuan, howling destiny hound, accompanied by seas, white horses? Or does hope make itself invisible, twisting and turning in silhouette, as the dark disperses the lonely? Does hope live in a lair, all covered with creepers and vines? Or is it buried deep for a few to keep, in a box marked only to be opened by the brave? Does it migrate like swallows, or hide in hollows? Is it like the breeze the children wonder, where it goes when no wind is blown? Is it replete, seeps underneath the skins of sinewy athletes and far-flung explorers? Can hope be measured, or does it descend into void when under examination. Is hope an appetite that those that have been hurt lose, or can it be replicated if we choose? Above all, is it always on the other side of a wall that must be knocked down, sometimes with grief, torrid passion, defiance or anger? Do the bricks in your wall gradually shift, giving way to a momentum, so that the mortar chaps into scree? Then there's a period of tension, a shimmer, a shake, and a tremor. And when the wall falls, can you see through the dust and past the rubble, finding your way in careful progress, culminating in a way to live, renewed, redirected, and the fulcrum sits. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And next up to the microphone, can we welcome Anita Daly?
Someone cut a power fuse before we got time to know what was happening to us. Voices strong and easy sweep away all the doubt that gave our minds already for tender years. His voice and body language flow now where once they were pressed. I marvel at the power given me to reach you when no one else could. Combination of gentleness swept away his past. We little everywhere under the gaze of laughter, because games are for learning the rules of life, and wisdom, like earth, held a hand from room. It wasn't that you weren't attacked in another way to me. It's because we have to make trust in different places. I can't believe the dream imagined for so long for my most wanted friend has started to come true. We have to be powerful. Last the adventure. Even hell can be funny if one looks on it brightly. He is shy with me for the first time, and the laughter in his eyes is no longer hard. Amusement is with me, not beside me.
Thank you, Anita. Just a reminder for new people to avail the is a recording of the open mic session that gets put onto the OVAL website, and if you'd like, if you don't want to be part of that, just tell me and I'll edit you out of it. Otherwise, you can take a look at it, you know, and have it for your own reference. Next up to the microphone, can we please welcome Mr. Gene Barry.
Thanks for that lovely poem earlier. I found what I got to read. So it reminded me a lot of Theodorgan's poem about his father. So this poem here, in Cork, if your name is Barry, I'd be known as Jeannie Bear, and my father was Michael Barry, and he was known as Mickey Bear. So the poem was called Mickey Bear. He would stand upright as an emotion, pride pushing back his tired shoulders, chin notably elevated, inviting the winning line, accelerated in thought, dead pucks landing on his manhood, a manifesto of excuses, like sunlit dust falling all around him, no catchers. He was in his world now, undwelt by others, expansive. Bequeath me this vision of yours, Dad. The denial won't fit me. These days, I stand at my sink or sit at my desk, entwined in my love for you, chin notably elevated and nurse your shadow. Thanks. When Ian Horan was here, the poet, a couple of weeks ago, I spent two nights with him, and over the two nights he told me a lot about his mother and father. He was an only child, and about where he came from in Durham in England, etc. And I wrote this poem a few days after he went back, and this is for Ian Horan. It's called Doorstep Judges. It was Billy's bag of apples that caught my attention. An equine smile sheltered those miner's shoulders that proudly carry the family story. A voice from the pushing crowd, "Isn't it your man? You know, the Gable fella." She smiled as she proudly held back the roguish pillow that was building up inside his loving frame and donned his hat to the now faithful crowd. The chariot they towed was decorated with their holiest trinity, mother, lover, and friend. Bless you, Audrey, and the torment that you carried for those years. Bless those wishes you held for the doorstep furnishers. Bless your tactile heart. I witnessed a young boy whistling to himself, his shoulders baggage-free, faithfully stacked the granite slabs freshly removed. The pockets of his tailored overalls bulging with trump cards. She smiled and waved. He waved and smiled as they led her through her village, their street now free of judges. This change of residence has done her the world of good and touched another country. Domino would be proud. Thanks. I have another poem here actually that about my father actually. I didn't expect this, but when I was studying about 10 years ago, I was studying as a psychotherapist, and we had to write down our dreams when we were doing interpretation of dreams, and this was a dream, and I woke up and took my little notes, and then I daydreamed, and then I wrote this poem down. So this is for Mickey Bear. It's called Acceptance. My father visited me last night, gift wrapped in understanding and smelling of forgiveness. The hand he laid on my shoulder, it hadn't changed. It radiated love, now set to the temperature of acceptance. He was smiling. He taught me how to swim in amniotic rivers, banked with maternal love. He winked at his lover, and she smiled. I let him fix my communion tie, and I smiled when he kissed me. I unlaced my little shoes and awaited the pleasure of him retying them with father's hand. I waited at the bus stop, ignoring mam's wishes, and boxed the expression on his face as he saw me, the world's smallest reception committee. I put it in my pocket and savoured the moment of retrieval. I was happy. He cut loaves of bread, hedges, grass, and umbilical cords. He was sound-like. I was saddened when he missed one old and large cord, and I wondered if he knew. When he got tired, I put him to bed and kissed him. They put the lid on and screwed it tight. Good night, Dad. Love you too. Read one more, Paul?
Yeah.
Short. This is a short one I call Unequal. A cadre of night punishers slipped in again and dipped their toes in my sleep, sending ripples of restlessness to waken me. Before the rivets of peacefulness had been driven home, they have landed a cortege of worries. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jean. And next up to the microphone, could we welcome Marie Casey.
Little one, you turn your divinity away, and always you turn it to stay. Closing it to the Little one. Little one, you threw your divinity away the moment you chose to stay, floating on a little girl's balloon. For you not to know, the time would surely come when a fatal prick would cause your fall into her waiting room. Unconscious, you came into being. Unconscious, you come into being to join her under earth, crying for some loss you sense the weight of mortal birth.
Thank you, Marie. Our next guest on the lineup, we're very pleased to have at Avail for the very first time, a very distinguished poet. It's really an honour to have him read. Could we have a warm welcome from Mr. Desmond Ogay? Maybe last year or the year before, and maybe one of these poems before also, because it came out of this last book. Anyway, I begin with, which might be some relevance to all of us who write poems and who read poems, that is where it all began for each of us, and that kind of thing. So my first little poem is called My School English Teacher. Of course, I eventually became a school English teacher myself, but that does not mean that you must see this as a self-portrait. And I want to thank you for inviting me to come to read this evening. Also, to meet grand old friends again. Yeah, my school English teacher. I was born in 1892. The first day you swing into our classroom for our English literature lesson, we do not know you from our years before. Senior teacher status kept your person at that remove. As of today, we are yours. Till our remove grants us senior status as grown-ups in life's university. From now on, life is what you make out of us. We boys rise with respect when you enter on your stroll to our room's rostrum. You hold two tomes against your chest, your coat of arms. My pair lie on my desk, brand new, unread. When we sit down, your scan punctuates us. You lift one volume in each hand and declare, poetry, prose. Today, we read a poem. I had seen no teacher like you before. You stand 6 straight feet tall and lean. Your head's poise makes you a reversed exclamation mark to that word, poem. Then you Euclid arms, hands, fingers to inscribe the words sound on blank blackboard as 4 sacred letters. You tell your script, poets live responsible to we readers for every word they write. If they do not, they are not forgivable. Unquote.
book in left hand, you read aloud with calm. Right hand conducts the rhythm as in music. What does the poet say to us, you ask? Then have us read aloud to your tick-tock. When we work out, write down the poet's theme, you point out his technique, that you call form. Words paint pictures, vowels and consonants. Vowels and consonants, rhymes and pauses, music, each line's rhythm. Bell. You wipe your soul word off blackboard's face. Find out all you can on that poet's life, sings your last line as you jaunt your exit. Your presence dawns my future mode of life. Libraries become Aladdin's cave of lies. Poets, artists, and great musicians, how they lived. My state of mind now warn me, create each day with no complications. When next we face the same poem, you face our blank blackboard. Scribe your next proper noun. Poet. You ask, what is that phenomenon? We think, outside school, no one like that is known. Say, we study their poems for exams, so we only know about famous sportsmen. You know, play your sports well to win the games. Poets play life's games and score with their poems. Once we can write on a poem's theme, technique, your comments focus on what you deem rare. My awareness grabs some, catches others, as your eccentric language starts to read real. You mention writers, artists, composers we should be aware of outside our course. Then, off the cuff, why they're so important, and spell out their curious names for us. Down from the tuneless rafters, through blind walls, you inscape creation's poems, cubist incels. What I hear, see, won't en face the same again, as I travel free gratis on bookshelves. Now, as incels, cubists, my agonbite of inwit, poems in stress Euclidic forms, in cells my who-ness shows, or fades for me on to in stress art constructs with words. My ego steals from all life's lives. Thoughts of their worlds reflect sometimes in my own. When we do that, no one poem's poet will fade out in our classroom forgotten. You get life from teaching. You get life from teaching. I mine from that. We're both content with what we think, contrive. Your master's psyche vocations my poets, helps create my life and my afterlife. I hope that that cloud you now read on up there encourages applause for what your one published schoolboy has put on shelves round here. When I join you, we'll talk forever on countries where my teaching housed me. Poets admired by you, whom I've seen since met, have known how art gets made from life's experience, and when we make it well, how it lives on. Excuse me for taking so long. Attempted painting a portrait of you. I probably, I hope, echoes for you too. Now, the other side of the experience is another little long term too. This time it's female. This is the second most important person in my life. These are two people who created, not me. But Lady Raffaella, as I call her. Her name was Raffaella. Met in reborn Dolce Vita, she tells me the Etruscans and Celts migrated west from Asia about the same time, met and loved each other here in Italy, where they taught those early Romans how to organize themselves, create city-states. She takes me to see her Tuscan home for their autumn wine festival, exemplifies how to live her Etruscan lifestyle with joy. She is of the aristocracy, in public, culturally, in private, as family. These families keep their country homes, vineyards, olive groves, gardens, for Tuscany seasonal holidays. Their city houses and lives facilitate practical matters, their children's education and urban cultural activities. In public they meet, in private invite the best national and foreign minds for companionable conversation over gourmet cuisine. They dine and wine well, sleep easy at night, and when elevated may epiphanize. In all their 12 Etruscan cities and crossbred Rome, my Lady Raffaella lives without light in her beauty of mind and body, refinement of taste and grace, natural pleasure in the arts of life. Lovingly awake to our new life, we bathe in the volcanic baths of her Tuscan countryside, refresh in iron water springs, rinse out hair in fresh beer, drench our bodies with last night's rainwater, tan our day. No facial decoration, except when occasion expects. Family gold, silver, beads, each piece naturally quiet. Her personal concerns focus on the survival of the student young, maturing artistic, cultured aged, to help create their futures and ends. Her example inspires vitality in me. And for the Amen, the old head of Kinsale says, I'm here in the Atlantic a long time, 250 million years. My first and only tenants were migrant Celts from the Mediterranean. They brought a light that gave safe passage to passerby sailors forever. They all left us in peace. Thus, we have lived more than 2,000 years. No change in my bent grass hair, It dies, regrows annually. No change in cough, guillemot, in chuff, in cough, guillemot, gynet, and fulmar. In kittiwake, sail a razorbill and skylark that play about my head. No change in bracken, bellheather, and sea thrift in blossom. Nor in beef or beastie, from beef bullock to pygmy, true, true. No change in the migrating mammals that swim my myth, and no change in me, other than age's natural weathering. I have my natural heritage here. I shall keep it for mine. A land that does not preserve its heritage is not a nation. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you very much, Desmond. That was great. And next up to the microphone, we have Sinead Ryan.
She has fallen from the dying embers of a star to the blanket of soft white snow beneath. Like phoenix rising from the ashes, her life begins slowly to paint a story on the blank canvas of the snow. And all the roads to travel have new endings and old beginnings. this one is called Loss of Innocence. The young child stands there waiting. She is only 8 years old, but her face has the look of one who has carried centuries of pain. She watches the buses of tourists as they come in. Hordes of foreign men flock out. Greedy eyes scan their surroundings. Many hands rub together in gruesome anticipation. Inquiries are made. Money passes hands, and the child is taken. In the past 5 years, this little girl has forgotten what it felt like to be a child. Pain, tears and shame are what she knows instead. She is a forgotten child, forgotten by the world, just like so many thousands of others. This one is the storm. Mountains of thick black shaving foam hang sulkily over the hills. Like a child with trembling lips and brimming eyes, ready to stamp his feet and howl at all those near him. Across the sky, a pack of dogs growl and a blue light flashes in the corner. The little boy screams, and the tears flow as the sky cries the rain. And this is the last one. Stolen songs. Each note illicitly treasured is a gift stolen from you and I. And nature breathes. Each song, selfishly enjoyed in secret, is a barb of cruelty, tearing us and them. And nature breathes. Beauty stolen, to be sold as a commodity. Such beauty fades and dies. You and I, in nature, breathe.
Thank you, Sinead. Next up to the microphone, we have Mr. Seamus Harrington.
For Patrick. Workshop. The weekly sit at Monster Lit, where highbrows knit till stanzas fit. Quicksilver muse may rarely choose in ones and twos to air her views. Aghast the stairs, verbose the players, when hottest wares meet cold naysayers. As lines dissect, wrong words inflect, with scant respect, half colons pecked. Who'll interrupt with figros cupped, barge in, disrupt before we've supped? Pick up the train of thought in vain, that prosaic strain may briefly reign. load caps are dropped, split hyphens mopped, old cliches cupped, italics locked. Syllabics sound while temples pound, mnemonics knowned, last gans abound. IQs inferred, at least one third as one concord, his nibs demurred. What you can say, people? The hunters. Slipped our vivid buoyant mooring where we left our dinghy bobbing in the sleeping inner harbour, we can take the shortest course for summer's favoured destination. When I switch my autopilot, said the skipper, from my lofty wheelhouse, I can navigate to Bullman in the middle distance. Silk unzipping wake of ocean making headway, let me know if you see bait or gannet diving on that sparkle off high water. You can always fathom out the secret places where they shelter. Hard astern for a moment is the signal, action stations, cutting engine swells the silence till the sudden clang of metal as the striker smacks the bell mouth, cause our bulbous bow wave rocks the painted lattice shackled over reams of bladder rack, as strong as sturdy nylon, where each spinning leaden sinker tears a catgut from its high-pitched screaming ratchet. Gather round me, said the bosun, gotta tell a fishy story. Not too closely, warned someone, gently holding our position, as the angle of the dangle catgut's almost sure to tangle. If we hook a longer fellow than the last day, then the record would be broken, we'd be famous. Early morning recreation in a line of hopeful anglers, then the merry whistling kettle matching jet trails vaporizing as the hoochie-coochie rhythm gently lapping past our transom. Perhaps a tasty morsel could be stolen from my spinner, leaving empty lures as unrewarding as the barest bottom portion of a topless scaly mermaid. Sulphur. It's here tonight. It's called Trade Winds. Seaman Adams, sole surviving mutineer, 40 years on. For a box of pencils and paper, I will trade Cook's final three volumes, their margins trimly annotated by Bly, saved from our flaming hull. If it please the Creator, grant me freedom to live out my days with this community reliant on me. Let bygones be bygones. Amen.
Thank you, Seamus. And next up, our next guest is Mr. Paul O'Malley.
I'll read 4 points. Okay, this one's called The Poet of the Shopping Centre. Some of you may have heard it before. I am the poet of Douglas Shopping Centre who prowls a walkway from boutique to supermarket, sits for coffee and mock curry in the olive tree, carries a super value bag for life. I am the writer of The Shelves, the Fairy Queen, who casts a cold eye over cereal packets and baked beans, searching for the lowest available unit price and a sell-by date for his addiction. I am those sandaled feet underneath a hemp hat from Nepal, feet that dance past caged rabbits and hamsters, eyes that look at passers-by and day by day see them lose their all. I wish I wasn't a bloke looking in Linda's lingerie window, a fella admiring the next door wedding dresses after a weekly visit to the pharmacy, a familiar face inside the public library. I am the poet of the shopping centre I'm going to do that line again. The poet of the shopping center has his digital photograph taken under the influence of writer's block. He chats with Mr. Kremen the butcher after a holiday in Christchurch and the price of liver. The management of the center is looking for a rhyming couplet to celebrate the indefinable lightness of being here, now, in the moment of indecision before purchase of a second shopping basket. I am that hand, steeped in boutique sand, vast trunkless legs stretch far away beyond this bond. The others are all a lot shorter. This is a short piece I wrote very early in the morning. I have a very young daughter and we were together in the kitchen. It's called On the Surface. Wild flowers in the garden, buttercups and a fallen apple tree, a shimmer of wind. Mingling snails cling to virgin shoots in couch grass and moisten each other. Wild morning thoughts, picture postcards after night, a film of oil on the surface of tea. I wrote the last two were written in Listowel at the Writers' Festival this year. I'd never been there before. I think it probably shows in the poems. Anyway, this one is called I Know No One. I know no one, recognize not a single face in the crowd. Even so, I expect my best friend will come round the corner with my smile on his face. I have strangers in my sight. The froth in glass on granite has a familiar rim. It waits to be swallowed in sips as I hold on to the hope of interruption. I have voices in untuned ears, cacophony of conversations in language spoken only by friends. I am the stranger at the bar, turning away from fun, facing the page, inventing company. I met two people in one of the conversations one has at the stall, and this is the report on the conversation, really. Life is an open prison, the writer on license declared as he sipped his pint at Listowel. I'm here on sufferance, you know, in case. I am the resurrection and the light. The mystical body escaped from the container, the skull shape and the emptiness within the bone. I am who am, now and in the forgiveness of time. I have been released from the company of minds until you take me. Two men, friends, one national school teacher, other back to farm, lonely for warmth in the rain and battering rocks, hungry for talk about Jesus and the imagery of an opened life, waiting for meaning and significance in the bar of the Listowel Hotel tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. And next up to the microphone, can we have a welcome for Helen Ronan Kavanagh?
Helen cabin or room, and sorry, Paul, you get the wrong way around everywhere. Sorry, okay. This is entitled Breakfast with a Hairy Ball. It's from the archives. Whilst sucking on my marmalade and sipping black tea, there from the corner of one eye, under the table, I see half bald, half dead, a dirty ball, rookie, staring, waiting, watching me. All worn and black, with patches hanging off, sitting, not breathing, lolling, seething, hoping for kick off. So my toast I abandon and make squeezy face, finished with eating, get out of my space. You silly old thing, useless and round, waiting for the boy from schoolyard to abound. Rigged out in his gear and bouncing with glee, to simulate hero, one kick will set you free. You roll in the grass and are a slave to his aim, dodge smelly little lumps for the sake of the game. You get stuck in long dryers with skin peeling off. Happiness for hours. Hair falling out. You land. He kicks. You bounce. He shouts. They score. You roll. Oh, look, the pout. Let's try again, you silently say. Come on, come on. Kick with that boot. Give me life this fine day. I live for a goal. You work for free. A great soccer team. Small boy and me. So I catch with two fingers this revolting round thing, and straight through the back door let go with a fling. I continue with my breakfast and wonder at it all, how for one little boy all happiness can be is one horrible, ugly to see, hairy old ball.
Don't put anyone off football. Yeah. We're hairy here now anyway, aren't we?
Yeah.
I'd say so. Thanks, Helen. Say that piece very far. Next up to the microphone, could we welcome Annie Power?
Right. This is called Anticipation. Saturday night, not long now. Somehow I feel okay. Today, not so great. But cutting losses is not an option. Adoption of positivity is necessary. Contrary to the naysayers, gamesayers use the rules. Mules carrying a dead weight. Say it, why bother hiding? Surprising what comes out. About how you think. Blink, an opportunity goes. Crows leave the wire. Inspire me with freedom. See some hope in your eyes. Realize what's on the way. Saturday. This is called Hovering on Happiness. I sound like Darth Vader as I breathe through my snorkel. My smiling face invites seawater in to coat my mask. I float along, underworld contentment hugs me like a drug. I'm hungry for the ocean. Shoals sparkle by like strobes of light, electrifying their dance floor. Their coral snacking is my soundtrack, every bite a beat. My eyes collate the colours but can't believe them. The Dulux stars have nothing on these coral chambers. My irises are humble, so I close their curtain and slowly kick the shore.
Thank you, Annie. Next up to the microphone, could we welcome Anne-Marie Granfield?
This is a poem I wrote a few weeks ago about Hurricane Katrina. I don't have a title name on it, but I'll just read it. Standing in a lilac garden, you feel safe, breathing in lavender indigo smell, feeling the warmth of the sun, enjoying the shadows of a weeping willow, everything silent and calm. It's magical, peaceful. It's a place where we'd all like to be. A garden of health, of growth, of new life. It's where a hurricane can't swipe. It's where no homes are lost, and where no people lie grasping there. It's a place where light shines, and it's where not a drop it's where not a drop of water drips, or where no tattered souls dare tread. It's where our minds strive to hold, to be bold, to live life, beating hearts, beating, beating. Come in, sit down, I open its gates, with angels by your side, guiding your steps, protecting your soul, holding your hand. Come in, welcome up.
Thank you, Marie. Last but not least, for the second part of the evening, before we go to the third part, after which we'll be calling last rounds at the bar. So, can we please have a welcome for Mr. Seon Barra?
Bible.